Hear that? Up there in that tree? Oh, yeah.
Tweet, tweet.
It's me and all my homies love native manu, and it's about to start.
Yes, E te whānau, this is me and all my homies love native manu, and this week we are talking about the tarapirohi, the black-fronted tern. And here, as always, to talk about our precious native manu, it's the Birdman, Pete Tonda.
Ah, morena, Liv. Good to be here. First program of winter. I'm bracing myself.
Yes, it is the first program of winter.
Yes, it's a long haul through winter. We're only just starting on it.
Do you have any tips for surviving winter?
Sleep a lot.
Yeah, nice.
Stay warm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe put on an extra couple kgs.
Yes, winter fat.
Yeah.
Yes.
Anyway, we are talking about the tarapirohi today, the black-fronted tern.
Yes.
Can you please give us the classification of this bird, Pete?
Yeah, it's endemic, only found here. Threatened, nationally endangered. So it was once very common in both the North Island, South Island in the 19th century, but suffered large losses since due to, you guessed it, introduced mammalian predators. Rats, stoats and cats are key culprits.
Yep.
Nowadays, they're mostly concentrated in Te Waipounaumu, the South Island.
On the braided river systems.
Yeah, and there's a small amount of seasonal migration to the North Island. But population today, I came across various figures, but it's somewhere between 2,500 and 10,000.
Yeah.
And they sort of move between that breeding area of the braided river system, and then in the non-breeding season, they shift out to coastal ocean environments.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Were some of them coming up to Te Kaumaui?
Yes.
Where do they come up here?
They're spread around.
Yeah.
Some of them go up as far north as the Kaipara, I think.
Wow.
But they just seem to be loosely spread around the North Island.
Yep.
But most of them in the South Island.
Yeah, yeah. But also known as the sea swallow?
Yeah. It's just the way they fly in the ocean. They're a bit like a swallow swooping, I think.
Okay.
And they're also called the plowbird.
Yes.
And that's because they used to, and still do, flock around the tractors when they're ploughing up fields.
I have very many memories of this going up on the farm.
Ah, right.
And seeing the tarapirohi, but also the southern blackback gull.
Yes.
Flock to where the tractor was working because, you know, all the grubs are there.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah. It's an adaptation, eh?
Yep.
They're smart, really.
Yep. So smart.
There's six tern species that breed in New Zealand. We've talked about the Taranui, the Caspian tern, already. But there's the Tara, which is the white-fronted tern. Tara iti, which is the fairy tern, the smallest one.
Yes.
The Takawai, Antarctic tern, and the Murawai, which is sooty tern, which I didn't realise Murawai was related to a bird.
You learn something new every day.
but today we're focusing on the tarapirohi.
Yes.
Yeah.
A special manu. So also for tangata whenua, also known as the tarapirohi or the tarapuka.
Hmm.
Love those names. And a valued manu for Ngāi Tahu. Why was this, Pete?
Oh, I think they value all their sort of species in their rohi.
Hard out.
And they're keen to, do what they can to protect them.
Yeah.
And particularly sort of iconic species for the braided river system.
Yes.
And
my favourite ecosystem in the whole wide world, the braided river system of the Canterbury Plains.
They are cool. And the eggs were traditionally harvested for mahunga kai.
Yep. Good source of protein.
But, you know, in those days, they were plentiful. They were very plentiful. So they could harvest eggs and it was sustainable.
It's not like it is now.
Yeah.
Where the bird is critically endangered. But, yes, it is an indicator species for the health of our braided river system. So More tarapirohe means healthier river systems.
Yeah, less predators and...
Yeah, of course. We've got a couple whakatauki as well. Pōkai tara. What does that mean, Pete?
It means a gathering of terns.
Awesome.
And terns were sort of associated with high status and grace.
Ooh.
I think it's just that smart manu. And then they, the way they fly and the way they hold themselves.
Yeah.
But the whakatauki is sort of a metaphor for a band of chiefs.
I think they're quite, like, they've got
regal.
Elegance.
Regal.
And they're regal. Harder. Yeah. I so agree.
So I think that's quite neat how Māori kind of related to the nature and behaviour of the manu and then translated that into their life and, you know, describing aspects of how they lived.
Yeah,
that's good.
Absolutely, yeah. And another whakatauki, e hara takutoa, he takitahi, he toa takatini. I've heard this one before, but what does that speak
to,
Pete?
Yeah, it's a more generic one. It sort of means my success is not mine alone, but the success of many.
I love that.
And it sort of can be applied to the synchronised flight of the tarapirohi. So when startled, the entire flock sort of moves as a single entity. It's a bit like a murmuration, but not quite as extended as the starlings sort of do. But their collective movement sort of gives them protection in numbers.
Yes, yeah.
And it also reflects that sort of traditional cultural value of collective action.
I love that. It takes a village.
Yeah.
No one's effort is on their own.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Which I think we need to remember in these fascist times. Yes, we've talked about how they kind of they appear quite regal, but how do they? What do they look like, Pete? And what do they eat as
well? Yeah. Well, I'd describe them as a smart-looking manu with a seasonal wardrobe. So in non-breeding plumage, they're grey, they've got a mottled grey cap over their head and a black eye patch.
Yeah.
And they've got an orange bill, but it's sort of black on the end.
Yeah.
But then come breeding, they transform and they get this jet black head cap.
Yo.
A smart little white cheek stripe. And a really bright orange bill. And it's like they've finished winter, they've gone to the hairdresser, they've got a flash hairdo, donned a smart new jacket and said, hey, I'm ready for love.
Oh, my God.
Well, you can see it.
You can. You really can.
You can feel it. Yeah.
So if you see that,
what compromises that, they've got very short legs.
What are you trying to say?
I'm sure they're not looking at each other and saying your legs are too short, but they have got short legs.
Okay.
And they've got a forked tail.
They do have a forked tail.
And they've got a sharply decurved beak.
What does that mean?
That's another one of those birdie terms.
Yeah.
And all decurved. It means is that their bill at the end curves downwards.
Okay.
So decurved is that it sort of turns downwards sharply.
And that's an adaptation for finding food?
Guess so.
If anyone's got any info on that, send it through.
So they're about 28, 30 centimetres long, wingspan 65 to 72 centimetres, and they weigh about 95 grams.
So kind of a medium.
Yeah.
But
and diet-wise, I find that interesting. And we had this with the kāke as well. They've got quite a different seasonal diet. When they're breeding in the braided river systems, they feed on nymph mayflies and stoneflies, and they do that by a thing called dipping. So they have a patch of river, they go downriver, and then they fly up, and then they dip into the river to get those little mayflies and stoneflies. And then once they finish that run, they go back and they sort of repeat it. But when they see fish, they sort of plunge into the water to get the fish.
I would love to see that, eh?
It's pretty cool.
Have you seen that happen before?
I've seen it with the Taranui, and you see that at the port, that they go downwind and they just do this sort of rotational searching of the same bit of water. But
it's kind of like
it's sort of related.
It's kind of like me at the buffet.
Yes.
Just to keep rotating, keep going back for more.
Your sessions probably last a lot longer than this.
Oh, Shut
anyway,
up.
They also are found on cultivated farmland, feeding on those worms and grubs.
Mm.
And there's one colony in the Eglinton Valley in Fiordland.
Ooh.
And they specialise in catching skinks on the river flats. And you kind of, that's kind of the only group that specialise in skinks. And you wonder how that happened.
Yeah, how did that happen?
Well, I reckon one day a manu came across some, got a mouthful of them, went back to the colony and said, hey, guys, this is bloody good tucker.
You got to try these bloody skinks.
I know, and then they all went and tried them and it became a thing. And
yeah,
that's
their
kind of cuisine.
Yeah, I love that. That's so interesting how they can adapt to their specific environment that they're in and just be like, okay, we're going to eat this now.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's good.
That.
But in non-breeding season, they head out to the coast and they feed in harbours, estuaries and coastal waters up to 50 kilometres from shore, and they feed mostly on planktonic crustaceans.
What the hell is planktonic?
Yeah, you get, plankton is just these little micro small organisms that live in the ocean.
Okay.
And they're kind of like the base of the ecosystem in the ocean, and they feed on those.
Okay.
Yeah.
Black plankton from SpongeBob.
Something like that.
And as for breeding, what have we got anything interesting that happening in their breeding sphere?
So usual pattern, monogamous pairs.
Yeah.
But the male has this courtship ritual of greeting the female with caught fish and offering it to the female in midair on the ground.
Hey, I like that.
It's great, eh? It's like giving flowers, but a lot more practical.
And I think what we've learned from these male manu is that they need to work harder.
They do.
So I'm glad to see the tata pedal here.
This one's putting in the effort.
Yeah, it's doing the mahi. Yeah.
Yeah. So they're 1 to 4 eggs. Beautiful eggs. They're lovely dark grey or green or brown, and then they've got these sort of black splotches or blotches. I never know which one it is.
Splotches either. Or blotches. You could just...
Blotches.
Okay, we're going to...
Both incubate and feed the chicks. And then, which is good. And then they fledge after about 4 weeks. But then the parents sort of keep feeding them for another couple of weeks.
Okay.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of overlap there. 1 to 4 eggs. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. I love this. And threats as usual...
Yeah,
in the braided river systems, we have hydro dams.
Yeah, they remove habitat. Invasive weeds are a real problem for a number of the manu.
They are.
And they're a problem because if you're smothered with weeds, you can't build a safe nest.
No.
Because you can't see predators coming and you can't sort of get away. So they need good kind of visual safety zones around their nests.
Yeah.
And the weeds cause a problem.
Definitely.
And, there's lots of predators, introduced and natives. So rats, stoats, ferrets, feral cats, hedgehogs, magpies.
Magpies?
Yeah, magpies.
Oh, my God.
And then native predators, the black-backed gull, we've talked about that before. The kahu is always after a meal. And the pied oyster catchers predate on them too.
Wow, yes.
So there's an army of predators out there.
Which has always been like a natural ecosystem here of predators, but it's with all these introduced predators, there's an imbalance,
Yeah.
And unfortunately, it is hard to set up protection control programs. Why is this?
Because they've got low fidelity to breeding sites. Which, a lot of manu we've talked about go back to the same site.
So these guys moving
around. These manu generally don't go back to the same site. And maybe it's a protective mechanism, or maybe they've learnt the braided river system so dynamic they've got to keep looking for new breeding sites.
Well,
tend to change each year. So if you set up a big predator control trapping program around the nesting sites, next season they're not there. They've gone 3 kilometres upstream. So that's a problem for helping to protect them. But they're doing some experiments, which I found interesting. They're setting up what's called social attractants.
Ooh.
And they use like bird calls and decoy turns, so little kind of fake turns. They're painted up sitting on fake nests.
Like what you do for duck shooting.
That's right. It's that sort of thing. Bird. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so then they sort of put those calls out, and they've got some early indicators that it might attract birds back to those areas.
Yeah.
But it's still a bit early. But it's worth doing, because if they can set up their predator control systems and keep those, you know, consistent, then it saves a lot of effort and
money. Yeah.
Yeah.
And Pete wrote something really cool here about my home of Twizel.
Yeah, why don't you talk about that?
So in the Upper Ōhau River, which is near Twizel, Doc, while working... Was it Doc?
It was Doc and probably the volunteer groups around there.
Yeah. 700 nests were established on the river.
And on an island, yeah.
On an island.
River Island, yeah.
Wow. And last year it had a really good breeding season due to big predator control. God, I'm losing my words. Hedgehog fences were installed and feral cat control, which is a big problem in the Mackenzie country. But good news, e te whānau, 100 tarapirohi chicks.
Yeah.
We're fledged.
And that's a good boost.
That's awesome.
That's good. So if we, you know, if we put the effort in, we put the resources in, and we need to, because we introduced all these pests, and we've put in the hydro dams, and we've introduced weeds, and so we've got an obligation to look after our native species. But, yeah, we can help them survive, and they need our help, so...
Yeah.
And it's an important manu.
Yep, so important. Thanks, Pete. And you've got a song for us to play. What is your song?
Song by Lady Hawk called River. And it's just about rivers. That's as simple as that. And, that's about it, really.
Kia ora. Kia ora. Kia ora.
Isn't that beautiful?
That was Me and All My Homies Love Native Manu, only on 95 BFM.